isn't that the truth? Isn't that the beautiful thing that our God is first faithful to us? That, you know, we think of us and our faithfulness, right? But God's the one. God's the one who's first faithful to us. And over the next couple of weeks, we're starting a new series, and we're going to be looking at various different characters from the Bible. And the series is called Real Life, Real Lessons. And we're going to be looking at the lives of different characters in the Bible and Real Life, Real Lessons. And what their lives can tell us, what the lessons are for us today. And it's a beautiful thing as we look at these various different stories, that characters that are known to us, and we look at the lessons that we can learn. The theme that I think we'll see running through everything is God's goodness chasing after us, chasing after them, chasing after us, his faithfulness, his worthiness of all our praise. So it's going to be a cool new series. I love hearing people's stories. I love being challenged by their lives and the lessons of others. And it feels like a real privilege this morning to be starting us off. I want to look today at what we can learn from five key moments in the life of my Bible character, who for now shall just remain nameless for a second. Because last week in Amped, I played this game with the kids. Well, actually, Jacob had set it up for me, but it was pretty cool. It's kind of like a version of Pictionary come charades, where there's a series of symbols, and from that series of symbols, you've got to try and guess what the Bible story is. So I thought that the Amp kids did so well last week, I'd try you guys out on it this morning. So for my five key moments of this Bible character who shall soon be revealed in a moment, let's see how you go. Can you guess this story? Oh yeah, okay, so no surprises there. My character is Moses, and this is Moses in the basket being put in the water and found by Pharaoh's daughter, right? Shall we read about it? Exodus chapter 1, verse 22. Now, we're going to be reading from lots of different portions, mostly in Exodus. So I've popped them all up on the screen. Feel free to follow along on your own device or Bible if you want. They're all going to be up on the screen, and let's read together. All right, here we go. Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people. Every Hebrew boy that is born, you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live. Crazy, hey? Now a man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. Now, I just have to interrupt there, because that verse cracked me up this week when I read it. I was like, lucky Moses wasn't an ugly baby, eh? Because it was when she saw that he was a fine child that she hid him for 3 months. When she could no longer hide him, she got a papyrus basket for him, coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her female slave to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. "This is one of the Hebrew babies," she said. Then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse him for you?" "Yes, go," she answered. So the girl went and got the baby's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you." Isn't that brilliant? I love the way God does stuff like that. So the woman took the baby and nursed him, and when the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, "I drew him out of the water." One of the things I'd never paid attention to before was that Pharaoh's instruction is to throw all the baby boys into the river, right? And that's actually exactly what Moses' mum does. So this woman, who isn't even given a name in this particular recount, we do find out the names of Moses' parents in the genealogies listed later on. But in this instance, she's simply a Levite woman. We're not even told her name. She's just an ordinary woman, but I would suggest with an extraordinary faith. As far as we know, she didn't receive a specific instruction from God. She didn't receive a promise from God about her baby. She didn't know. She had no idea whether the outcome of her actions would be good or not. But she just wasn't prepared to settle without at least giving God a chance to maybe do something. Come on. There's a real life lesson there, right there, for us this morning. We're diving straight into it, no mucking around, okay? Because there are some of you who are living under a cloud of negativity. Maybe it's words that have been spoken over you, a diagnosis, maybe something generational in your family line, something that feels inevitable, right? Something that you've allowed to just settle. And you need to hear this morning that God is still God in the out of control stuff. There's nothing much more out of control than being told to take your baby and drown them in the river, right? Anybody that has ever given birth to a child or loved anybody knows that that is just crazy. And maybe some of us, we also need to do what Moses' mum did, and we need to make a little bit of room for God to be God and to maybe do something. We don't have to just accept the unacceptable, because I'm with Moses' mum, and taking the baby boys, especially the good-looking ones, no, just jokes, any baby and throwing them over the river, that is outrageously unacceptable, right? So she goes, that's outrageous. I'm not settling for that. I am going to do something. I am going to make a little room, and maybe God will. She says, Pharaoh, I hear your instruction to throw my baby in the river. But you didn't say anything about a waterproof basket, did you? You know, like, maybe we need to hear again this morning that we've got permission to be creative. We've got permission to think outside the box. We don't have to just accept. And this just maybe God would do something, that kind of faith, it reminds me of another story deviating from Moses for a second. But in 1 Samuel 14:6, Jonathan, he's just had enough of the Philistines. So he says to his young armor bearer, come, let's go over to the outpost of those uncircumcised men. Perhaps the Lord will act on our behalf. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving, whether he uses a whole army or just a few. Did you catch the words again? Perhaps the Lord. Again, no guarantee, no promise, just a refusal to settle. In the midst of everything that's out of control, there's this willingness to make a little room and just see what God might do. That's the kind of faith that Moses is born into, that sees his own mother paid to nurse him, and then sees Moses provided for and raised under Pharaoh's own roof. Isn't that just brilliant? So here's the thing. If you have undesirable circumstances that clouded your birth, or maybe a slightly dodgy family history, or just some kind of out of control kind of stuff in your world, man, Moses is your guy. Actually, that's not quite right. Moses' story is for you, but God is your guy. Okay? Because God is the one who loves to show up in the unexpected, He loves to get crazy creative, okay? He loves to flip the script. And I think that there are a few of us here this morning that he'd love to just shake a little and say, come on, don't settle. Get creative. Make a little room for me and just see what I might do. So first key moment, Moses escapes certain death at birth. Second key moment, Moses forgets about making room for God and takes matters into his own hands. Here you go. Have we got that one? Can you guess it? He does kill someone. Who does he kill? He kills the Egyptian. He tries to bury him in the sand. And then he goes, uh-oh, I better run for my life. Yeah? Okay, there we go. Let's read about this one. Exodus chapter 2, 11 to 15 says this. Many years later, when Moses had grown up, he went out to visit his own people, the Hebrews, and he saw how hard they were forced to work. During his visit, he saw an Egyptian beating one of his fellow Hebrews. After looking in all directions to make sure no one was watching, Moses killed the Egyptian and hid the body in the sand. The next day, when Moses went out to visit his people again, he saw two Hebrew men fighting. Why are you beating up your friend? Moses said to the one who'd started the fight. The man replied, who appointed you to be our prince and judge? You're going to kill me like you killed the Egyptian yesterday. Then Moses was afraid, thinking, everyone knows what I did. And sure enough, Pharaoh heard what had happened and he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in the land of Midian. So who can relate to this key moment? Hopefully not the killing someone part, right? But how about the rushing in part? How about the feeling conflicted part, the reactionary stuff? See, Moses is at a bit of an identity crossroad in this portion of his life. All of a sudden, the privilege of his people by upbringing stands in stark contrast to the hardships of his people by birth. And for a moment, Moses loses himself. And he forgets that, or he thinks that he's the one that's got to fix it, that he's the rescuer, right? So he puts himself in this place that God never intended him to be. He forgets that his core identity is not as child of a Levite woman or child of Pharaoh's court, but his core identity is always, has always been, as child of God. And God's the one who does the rescuing. Do you get that? Like for Moses, there were these two real distinctive things. Child of a Levite, right? That was him by birth. Child of Pharaoh's court, that was him by upbringing. But actually his core identity was in neither of those things. Your core identity is not in anything other than child of God. And you know, identity crossroads can come in all different forms. When I was at high school, God started to stir in me two things. Firstly, my heart for marginalized people, and secondly, my dissatisfaction with our education system. And funny, it was only as I wrote that this week that I realized what a perfect job I have landed in at Springboard in light of that. But anyway, during high school, there were a couple of catalysts for that. One was that I read a number of short stories by a New Zealand Māori author called Witi Ihimaira. And that really opened my eyes to the challenges of Māori living in a Pākehā world. And then at the same time, I had a number of friends come from the Pacific Islands to do their secondary schooling years in New Zealand. And I was really frustrated that they just didn't seem to have access to the same resources and opportunities as I found myself with. And my very legitimate frustrations led me to some really invalid conclusions about my identity. And for a while, the colour of my skin became a real problem to me. You know, that was my own doing, my own internal conflict. But I actually wanted to acknowledge this morning that for some of you, racial tension or injustice may well be a real part of your story. And I'm really sorry if anyone has ever made you feel less than because of their own prejudices. Maybe some of you have had different kinds of identity conflict, where you've wrongly placed your identity in a career or in a certain image. You know, just this week, I had a young person tell me that they were being hassled at school for the shoes they were wearing, which were brand new Nike, mind you, but didn't quite cut the standard. Like, how crazy have we got? You know, add in the mix of that sexual identity, gender identity, choosing whatever you want as your identity, and we are facing an identity crisis like never before. Or maybe you've simply believed the lie that you are your mistakes. Moses in this moment. Your identity defined by your decisions and your actions, whether for good or for bad. Man, whatever we resonate with this morning, I believe that God would gently remind all of us to anchor ourselves to our core identity as a child of God. Moses' identity crossroads sees him attempting to hide his mistake, namely the dead Egyptian. Side note, if you ever find yourself having to cover up your intervention, you've probably wasn't your best move. But Moses' failed cover-up then leads him to running away from Egypt and spending 40 years in the wilderness before our next key moment. Okay, no surprises for guessing this one. The burning bush, you got it. Okay. All right, let's read from Exodus chapter 3. There's bits from chapter 3 and 4. So all the verses are on the screen, but I'll kind of, skip from part to part because otherwise it's a very long reading. One day Moses was tending the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led the flock far into the wilderness and came to Sinai, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the middle of a bush. Moses stared in amazement. Though the bush was engulfed in flames, it didn't burn up. "This is amazing," Moses said to himself. "Why isn't that bush burning up? I must go see it." When the Lord saw Moses coming to take a closer look, God called to him from the middle of the bush. "Moses, Moses." "Here I am," Moses replied. "Don't come any closer," the Lord warned. "Take off your sandals, for you're standing on holy ground. I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." When Moses heard this, he covered his face because he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord told him, "I have certainly seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I've heard their cries of distress because of their harsh slave drivers. Yes, I am aware of their suffering. So I've come down to rescue them from the power of the Egyptians and lead them out of Egypt into their own fertile and spacious land. It's a land flowing with milk and honey, the land where the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites now live." Woo, got there. "Look, the cry of the people of Israel has reached me, and I have seen how harshly the Egyptians abuse them. Now go, for I am sending you to Pharaoh. You must lead my people Israel out of Egypt." But Moses protested to God, "Who am I to appear before Pharaoh? Who am I to lead the people of Israel out of Egypt?" God answered, "I will be with you. down to verse 13. But Moses protested, if I go to the people of Israel and tell them, the God of your ancestors is sent to you, they will ask, what is his name? Really? Then what should I tell them? God replied to Moses, I am who I am. Say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent you. Chapter 4, but Moses protested again. What if they won't believe me or listen to me? What if they say, the Lord never appeared to you? Verse 10, because God then goes on to give him all these miracles and signs and things to do. But verse 10, Moses pleaded with the Lord, oh Lord, I'm not very good with words. I never have been. And now I'm definitely not, even though you've spoken to me, I get tongue-tied and my words get tangled. Then the Lord said to Moses, who makes a person's mouth? Who decides whether people speak or don't speak, hear or don't hear, see or do not hear and do not see? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will be with you as you speak and I will instruct you in what to say. But Moses again pleaded, Lord, send someone else. Here we find Moses stuck in his own internal narrative. I suspect that the same concerns for his people that led him to kill that Egyptian 40 years earlier haven't left him. I suspect that he's continued to carry the same questions about where was God? And what was he doing? And did he even see? And did he have a plan to intervene at any point? In fact, I suspect that God is directly answering Moses' unspoken questions when he says, I have certainly seen the oppression of my people. Yes, I am aware of their suffering. But there's something else that Moses has carried for all those years. I don't believe he's ever settled the conflict of his identity from 40 years earlier. That's why his first response is, who am I? He still hasn't got it. He still hasn't settled that. He's written himself out of God's call on his life, and he's stuck in his own internal narrative of guilt and mistakes and failure. Because come on, here he is standing barefoot in front of a talking bush that's engulfed in flames and isn't burning up. God is literally speaking to him, right? He's literally telling him that he's got plans for him to be part of a grand rescue plan. And Moses' narrative? Nah. I tried that. Didn't work out so well, remember? He's stuck. He's stuck back where he was 40 years ago. Who am I? Who am I that you're calling me to do this? Well, here's a question for us this morning. Who are we not to? Like, if God says it, who am I not to? Who am I to limit what I think God can do because of what I think I can't? Really, who am I to put limits on what I believe God can do because of what I think I can't? I'm putting myself in the place of God. And here's another thought. Who's on the other side of my obedience? In this case, it was a whole nation of people still stuck in slavery. Who's on the other side of what God's asking? It might be something as simple as God giving you a word of encouragement or a prophetic picture for someone. And when we hesitate, that person misses out. It's not just us. I would be as bold as to suggest, and perhaps this is my personal experience speaking, that our reluctance is usually due to a lack of faith. And often our lack of faith is the result of putting our faith in the wrong things. See, God's response to the who am I question is nothing to do with Moses' giftings, his talents, his powers of persuasion. You're the guy. You're the one that can convince Pharaoh. You know, you could sell ice to an Eskimo. It's nothing to do with that. It's nothing to do with his powers of persuasion, his fine features that he's had since birth, right? His extraordinary personality. Because it doesn't matter how good you are, that is a really weak place to put your faith. Okay, no matter how good you are. God simply says, I will be with you. That's his answer. So Moses, who am I? God, I will be with you. Yeah. Moses, well then who are you? Because that's essentially what he's asking with that whole random, what name should I tell them question. Like, has that ever seemed a little bit weird to you? I know there's like massive significance in names, and there's this other whole theology around the significance of I am. But for Moses to go in the first place, oh, what name should I use? Like, is that a little bit weird? It's essentially Moses going, okay, well, you've just blown off my who am I question. So next question, who are you? Who are you? And here's the thing. Let me find my notes, and then I'll tell you what the thing is. When we're not convinced that God is who he says he is, we can find all the reasons in the world to back out of what he's calling us to step into. Okay, that's the thing worth repeating. Here it is. When we're not convinced that God is who he says he is, we will find so many reasons to back out of what he's asking of us. And at the crux of it is not a lack of faith in ourselves, it's a lack of faith in God. This key moment is actually the reason that I chose Moses. Because I resonate with his doggedly stubborn reluctance. But even as I prepared this week, God challenged me. See, I often describe myself as an accidental or a reluctant leader. Like, I know that I'm positioned within my work. I don't know what is happening with this thing here, but let me see if I can get it to fit a bit better. There we go. All right. I know that at work I'm positioned in a leadership space, but my default narrative is that I've kind of accidentally landed there. I'm the reluctant, slightly freaking out one in the corner. And God said to me this week, I want you to stop speaking that. I want you to stop using that language to describe yourself. Stop defining yourself by your past and stop letting insecurities attach themselves to you. I've called you to lead, and there's nothing accidental about how I position people. So lose the reluctant and occupy your space, just like he told the Israelites to occupy the land. Okay, ever get a kick up the bum from God like that? No? All right, well, I'm sharing mine with you this morning, and I am kicking you up the bum on behalf of God. Because you think I'm joking. I'm really not. Here's the thing. What narratives are we stuck in? Okay, if this Moses real life, real lessons, what are the lessons? What narratives are you stuck in? What past failures are you hiding behind? What excuses are you using to disguise your lack of faith? What God story have you written yourself out of? What space are you refusing to occupy? What people on the other side of that are missing out if you don't obey? Come on. There's a hurting world out there that needs us to anchor ourselves to our identity as sons and daughters of God, to trust that God is who he says he is, and to occupy the spaces that he's calling us into. Because this is the next chapter of Moses' story. Well, God's story with Moses. And here we go. Let's see if you can guess the next one. Okay, there we go. Because God called him to do something, and eventually Moses went and did the thing, and we've got a whole collection of excerpts from Exodus chapters 12 right through to 17 that we're going to take a look at in this portion. Okay, so our first scripture, looking at the Exodus itself. Exodus chapter 12, 31. Pharaoh sent for Moses and Aaron during the night. "Get out," he ordered. "Leave my people and take the rest of the Israelites with you. Go and worship the Lord as you've requested. Take your flocks and your herds, as you said, and be gone. Go, but bless me as you leave." Okay, then in chapter 14, then the Lord gave these instructions to Moses. "Order the Israelites to turn back and camp by some other name between Migdol and the sea. Then Pharaoh will think, the Israelites are confused, they're trapped in the wilderness. And once again, I'll harden Pharaoh's heart and he will chase after you." Verse 10, "As Pharaoh approached, the people of Israel looked up and panicked when they saw the Egyptians overtaking them. They cried out to the Lord and they said to Moses, 'Why did you bring us out here to die in the wilderness?'" Verse 15, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Why are you crying out to me? Tell the people to get moving. Pick up your staff and raise your hand over the sea. Divide the water so the Israelites can walk through the middle of the sea on dry ground.'" And then we have these stories that go through, that go from these mountaintop moments to these next bits. In chapter 14, verse 22, they traveled in this desert for 3 days without finding water. When they came to the oasis of Marah, the water was too bitter to drink. Then the people complained and turned against Moses. "What are we going to drink?" And they demanded. So Moses cried out to the Lord for help, and the Lord showed him a piece of wood. Moses threw it into the water, and it made the water good to drink. Chapter 16. Then the whole community of Israel set out from Elim and journeyed into the wilderness of Sin. There too, the whole community of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron. "If only the Lord had killed us back in Egypt," they moaned. "There we sat around pots filled with meat and ate all the bread we wanted. But now you've brought us into this wilderness to starve us all to death." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Look, I'm going to rain down food from heaven for you." So Moses and Aaron said to all the people of Israel, "By evening, you'll realize it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. In the morning, you'll see the glory of the Lord because he's heard your complaints, which, by the way, are against him, not against us." Last story in chapter 17. At the Lord's command, the whole community of Israel left the wilderness of Sin and moved from place to place. Eventually, they camped at Rephidim, but there was no water there for the people to drink. So once more, the people complained against Moses. "Give us water to drink," they demanded. "Quiet," Moses replied. "Why are you complaining against me, and why are you testing the Lord?" Verse 4, Then Moses cried out to the Lord, "What should I do with these people? They're ready to stone me." The Lord said to Moses, "Walk out in front of the people, take your staff, the one you used when you struck the water of the Nile, and call some of the elders of Israel to join you. I'll stand before you on the rock at Mount Sinai. Strike the rock and water will come gushing out. Then the people will be able to drink." So Moses struck the rock and the rock, as he was told, and the water gushed out. Huh. Funny, eh? Do we see ourselves in the pattern of these stories? This collection of stories, though, should be a real encouragement to them, because focusing in on Moses, you know, we see Moses' career highlights. Crossing the Red Sea surely had to be a career highlight. Pharaoh saying go and giving them all their gold and stuff and just going, "Get out of here." You know, surely that's got to be a career highlight. And then these career highlights are just followed by like crushing circumstances, difficult traveling companions. Come on, you thought you had difficult workmates. What about these ungrateful so-and-sos? These stories, they reflect the ups and downs of life. This is life, people. Hilltop moments and valleys all mixed in together. If you're expecting something different than that, you're going to be disappointed, because this is life. But in the ups and downs of these moments, we begin to see the pattern that will become the defining feature of Moses' life. The pattern of taking everything back to God. The people grumble to Moses. What does Moses do? Take it straight to God. Oh, they come back again. Moses. He just goes straight back to God. In fact, he says to them, don't you realize you're not actually moaning at me? You're not actually complaining at me. He's finally getting his identity. His identity as child of God. It's God's problem, not his. He's just the messenger. So in these stories, we see this pattern of him learning to take it all back to God. This is not my problem, God. This is yours. You called me here. So now what are you going to do about it? Right? Not in a cheeky, bratty kind of way, but like an acknowledgement. Man, this is on you. You are the one with the ability. In the face of trouble, Moses lets God provide the answers. This is how Moses steps into his destiny, into the design that has always been on his life. Right from birth, God's always intended to use Moses like this, but Moses needed to grab hold of one really significant truth, that God is actually the central character in his story. Moses' job was simply to partner with him. It's about surrender. God has the ultimate plan, which, by the way, is always for our good and for his glory. He's the master storyteller. He's the rescuer. He's the problem solver. He's the one that weaves all the chapters together. All his life, we sang it earlier, all my life you have been faithful. All Moses' life, God has been intentional in Moses' story, providing rescue as a baby, providing training in Pharaoh's court as a young man. Hey. Providing, you know, like even in Moses fleeing from his mistake, God there is providing more training. 40 years shepherding sheep, thinking that his part in God's story was over, and all the while that was actually God preparing him for 40 more years, leading a couple million people through the wilderness. We must learn to see our story within his story, because it's the only way that our story makes sense. For some of you, there are really painful chapters in your story that don't make any sense and may never make any sense this side of eternity. But seeing our story within his story is the only way that we can make peace and make sense. I wanted to add, please hear me here, because if you're someone who has suffered abuse in any form at the hands of someone else, what I am not saying for a second is that God orchestrated that or was okay with that. He totally was not. But can I urge us all this morning to take our lead from Moses, to develop the same pattern as Moses. When troubles come, because they will, our first stop, not our last resort, has to be God. Do you know this life pattern of Moses saying yes to God, following his instructions and trusting his lead? It had this result. In Deuteronomy chapter 34, it says this. I think we've got a slide for it. There has never been another prophet in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. The Lord sent him to perform all the miraculous signs and wonders in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh and all his servants in his entire land. With mighty power, Moses performed terrifying acts in the sight of all Israel. Verse 10, there's never been another prophet in Israel like Moses. This is the same Moses, people, that first said, "Who am I? Please send someone else." This same Moses is described like that. What a cool transformation. What an encouragement that should be for us. It'd be real nice to leave the story there, and I am about to wrap up because our time is gone. But Moses has one last lesson for us. Okay, you know what those symbols are, right? Now, the first time God told Moses, strike the rock, the water will gush out. That's what Moses did. Second time, let's read about it. This one's from Numbers chapter 20. There was no water for the people to drink at that place, so they rebelled against Moses and Aaron. Oh, sounds familiar. The people blamed Moses and said, "Why did you make us leave Egypt and bring us here to this terrible place?" Moses and Aaron turned away from the people and went to the entrance of the tabernacle where they fell face down on the ground. Then the glorious presence of the Lord appeared to them, and the Lord said to Moses, "You and Aaron must take the staff and assemble the entire community. As the people watch, speak to the rock over there, and it will pour out its water. You will provide enough water from the rock to satisfy the whole community and their livestock." So Moses did as he was told. He took the staff from the place where it was kept before the Lord. Then he and Aaron summoned the people to come and gather at the rock. "Listen, you rebels," he shouted. "Must we bring you water from this rock? Must we bring you water from this rock?" Then Moses raised his hand and struck the rock twice with his staff, and water did gush out. So the entire community and their livestock drank their fill. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not trust me enough to demonstrate my holiness to the people of Israel, you will not lead them into the land I'm giving them." Here's the final key moment, the final lesson that Moses offers to us this morning. We never get beyond our need of God. The moment we make it about ourselves, we're in trouble. This one moment of frustration, valid frustration, right? The people were being right idiots. Okay, valid frustration. But the moment Moses took that on, made it personal, made it about himself, he made a mistake. This one moment where he trusted his past wisdom, where he thought to himself, "I've done this before, I know how it works, I hit the rock and the water comes out." This one moment of deviating from the clear instruction God had given, it cost Moses dearly. It's the reason that after all those years, he never did get into the promised land. We talked earlier of not limiting what God can do because of what we think we can't. But here's another thought. Let's not fall into the trap of limiting what God can do through us because of what we think we can do on our own. Pride comes before a fall. My grandfather lived to 99, and to the day that he died, he never stopped reading his Bible and seeking God's direction. We never get so old or so wise that we don't need God. Real life, real lessons. We need to finish up. We're going to enjoy some lunch together up in the hall real soon. But I have this conviction that church is a place where we shouldn't walk out the same as we walked in. And I'm convinced that God's been stirring something in us this morning. So we are going to take some time now to respond. And we're just going to put on some music in the background. And I would love to invite those of you that aren't in a rush to just close your eyes. And we're just going to ask God to pinpoint what it is that he's saying to us this morning. Reflecting on the five lessons from these key moments in Moses' story. We got some, got a song to play. Here's kind of a recap of the things that I really felt God was bringing to us this morning. I believe God wants to release creativity this morning. If you've settled into acceptance or resignation to something unacceptable in your life, God has fresh creativity for you and a maybe God will kind of boldness. If you need that this morning, can I invite you just to pop up your hand? Awesome. How about this one? If you've disqualified yourself and ridden yourself out of God's story, maybe because of family circumstances, past mistakes, discouragement, imposter syndrome, lack of faith, God's inviting you to remember your identity as a child of God and to exchange all your doubts and insecurities this morning for His blessing. If that resonates with you this morning, just pop up your hand. So good. If you're here this morning and you actually know God's call on your life, but like Moses, you've been tempted just to opt out. Right now, you have the opportunity to give God your yes and put your hand up as a declaration that you're going to occupy your space. Is there anyone here this morning? So good. And maybe there's some of you here this morning that you've realized that you've actually been leaning on your own wisdom and your past successes. And you need to repent and seek God's direction again. If that's you, just raise your hand. Awesome. And you know, I don't want to go a Sunday without reminding us that, you know, this story of the Israelites being freed from slavery in Egypt is a story of salvation. And salvation is God doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. And we all need a salvation story. We'll never step into the full life that God has planned for us if we don't first acknowledge that we need God to save us. So if that's you this morning and you want to say yes to Jesus, I invite you to raise your hand. Man, so many beautiful people responding to God's work in you this morning. And Father God, I just thank you that you are always on mission for us, in us, and through us. Thank you that you're inviting us this morning to take the limits off. Not that we can actually limit you, but you invite us to take the limits off our thinking about you and about what you're longing to do in and through us. And we say yes to you again this morning. We receive your forgiveness and the gift of your salvation. We receive your creativity and your boldness. We step into our identity as your sons and daughters, and we commit to occupying the spaces that you're calling us to. I've got just one last request. Because if we can't minister to each other, encourage each other, championing each other, if you can't experience that here, I don't know where you're going to find it. So if you raised your hand to any of those life lessons this morning, I would love you. We're going to end by just standing where you are, and the people around you are just going to be the hands and the mouthpiece of God to you this morning. And then we're going to carry that ministry time right on up into the hall. But if you responded to any of those things, would you be bold enough to stand just where you are? And those around you this morning, they are going to minister to you through prayer, through a hug, through a word. If you respond in this morning, I would love you to let us as a church champion and encourage you this morning. So if that was you and you popped up your hand to any of those things, give us the chance to pray with you. Just stand up where you are right now. Awesome. And those around you, if you've got nobody around you, go and find somebody to minister to encourage this morning. And as we finish down here, we'll carry that ministry on up in the hall. So be activated, people. Let's go. Amen. Amen. Amen.